should, at the beginning, note that I don't have any disclosures of financial conflicts of interest to declare. But this paper, I think, is sits really nicely with this general theme of the session around neoliberalism. So part of the response to the Great Recession in Europe, as you will well know, has been a move to implement a series of austerity policies which have tried to reduce government expenditure, but also to limit access to much needed sources of state support. And one of the manifestations of this has been to implement sanctions, particularly around unemployment insurance or unemployment benefit, which is called Job Seekers Allowance in the UK. And in this talk, what I want to look at very specifically is whether this shift in sanctioning regime that was implemented under the Conservative and Liberal Democrat coalition from around 2011 onwards has changed the relationship between sanctioning and the number of people that are claiming unemployment insurance or seeking job seekers allowance, and perhaps what are happening to those people in response to being sanctioned. So I'm going to spend the first kind of couple of minutes just giving you some background and context to the kind of big story that's happening here, and then kind of move into talking about some of the findings from the product and from the project. I should mention, actually, before I kind of talk about this slide, that the lead author on this paper is actually Rachel Loopster is here as well. So I just wanted to acknowledge that this is a kind of collaborative effort from a number of scholars.
Is she here?
She is. She's sitting there. She's waving. So also, I left her email. Let me go back. Can I do that? Yeah, I left her email up on the slide so that if you want to pester her with questions, that would be great. But obviously happy myself to talk as well. Anyway, so this is the change in the sanctioning rate in the UK as a whole from around the beginning of 2005 to roughly the beginning of 2014. So time is along the x-axis here, and each vertical bar is the proportion of job seekers allowance claimants who are sanctioned. So if we look at the period before the coalition government came to power, we see an average level of sanctions is around 2.5 to 3%. And so we're seeing that around that proportion of people that are claiming unemployment insurance are being sanctioned in some form, kind of on a month-by-month basis. After the government comes to power, we see a rise in that level. And there's a number of policies that kind of shift in that. But we see the number of people being sanctioned rises. And then if we look at the most recent period, the data here, which is kind of 2013, we actually get up to just over 5%. So the number of people being sanctioned almost doubles over a very short period of time. But this also masks wide variation across the United Kingdom. So in the graph to your left, this is 2009. And you won't be able to see this, but the regions of the UK are local authorities. These are kind of local governments, kind of at the county level would be a kind of comparison. And the light blue shaded areas, which you probably can't even see at the back, there's only a few of them, have very, very low levels of sanctioning. In 2013, you can see that we have much more dark blue. And these are areas where the sanctioning rate has got up over 8%. So we're talking almost 1 in 10 of the people in that region who are claiming uninsurance benefit are being sanctioned in some way. This is a radical shift over a very short period of time with potentially quite wide implications. So, a little bit about Job Seekers Allowance. When you seek to claim unemployment insurance, you need to go to one of these offices, Job Centre Plus offices. And here you will meet with your job coach or job centre advisor who you have to meet on a bi-weekly basis. This is coming to sign on, as they say in the United Kingdom. And Job Seekers Allowance is a weekly cash benefit provided to those who are unemployed and who are actively seeking work in some way. But most recently in the UK, you need to demonstrate that you are actively seeking work. And this is where a lot of the conditionality has been implemented. Now, conditionality is not a new concept when it comes to state support of various kinds. For example, in the UK, for many years, you need to be A, unemployed, and also be available for work to receive unemployment insurance. But since the mid-90s, as part of this kind of neoliberal agenda, there's been this shift towards behavioural conditionality. So these are conditions that are placed on the job seeker to perform certain actions to qualify or to be eligible for unemployment insurance. And if you fail to meet those criteria, then you are eligible or likely to be sanctioned as a result of that. And sanctioning can involve the removal of the unemployment insurance. That is, you stop being paid the money that you would have been entitled to if you had met those criteria. So I'm not going to spend a great deal of time going through these changes, but just to suggest that since the coalition government came to power, since 2011, there have been two broad changes to the way in which this has been implemented. One is that the number of areas in which you can be sanctioned, or sorry, the number of conditions that are placed upon you has increased. That is, they have become more detailed, more specific, and also cover a wider range of areas. So, for example, if you turn up late to an appointment, you can be sanctioned. If you don't meet the specific number of targets for jobs that you need to apply for, then you can be sanctioned. So the number of ways in which you can fail has been radically increased. Second is that the punitive side of the sanction has become more draconian. That is, the period of time for which you can lose your unemployment insurance has increased. So the minimum sanction period is now 4 weeks, and it can be as long as 3 years for those that are repeat offenders. Now, this is still a quite rare scenario, but many, many people are still sanctioned for at least, as I said, that minimum 4 weeks. So these are the changes that we see that explain partly this dramatic increase in the sanctioning rate across this period. Now, this is just an example of the types of guidance that job centre advisors now give to those that are claiming unemployment insurance. And I don't want to go through this in detail, but just to suggest that one of the things that shifted here is the level of autonomy that the job seeker has in determining how they go about looking for work. That actually now the job centre advisor, the job coach, becomes the source of the conditions that need to be met to be eligible. And that creates some conflicts around seeking appropriate work for your skill level and also trying to meet the targets that perhaps potentially are involved in this process. Now, what's the debate here? So the government, in implementing this, have said that these sanctions can be a positive for job seekers, that they can be the jolt that they need. It's these tough conversations that are what help these people kind of have a wake-up call and kind of motivate them to go out and seek work. And I'm kind of paraphrasing this gentleman on the left, who's Neil Cooling, who you have no reason to know except the fact that he's one of the senior civil servants leading this work in the Department for Work and Pensions in the UK. But what's the evidence for this? Well, in the UK, there hasn't actually been a study or an evaluation of whether this works, hence our particular paper. But in the US, there has been some. And in the US, there isn't very clear evidence that actually sanctions work in any way in terms of motivating people to enter employment. But it is associated with lower caseloads of those that are being unemployed. So we see people leaving unemployment insurance, but not necessarily moving into work. Now, and there are also concerns about the health implications and economic hardship that come with this, that if you remove this level of state support, where will these people find the additional income that they have lost? And this has raised concerns. In the UK, as you can imagine, people have been very critical of this set of policies, and there have been parliamentary inquiries which have shown that it's people with learning difficulties, it's people with health issues, it's the vulnerable people in our society who are the most likely to be sanctioned, suggesting that the potential economic hardships and health consequences are even worse, and that people do not understand the process, that actually it's quite complex and very detailed, and they're not fully cognizant of the consequences of, for instance, applying for 9 rather than 10 jobs over a 2-week period. There's also a disconnect in the evidence. So, for example, this is just a media report to highlight that what we see in the UK is that there was, during this period, a decline in the number of people who were claiming job seekers allowance, but that the unemployment rate remained stable. This disconnect suggests this kind of same pattern that we've seen in the United States, where the caseload declines, but really these sanctions aren't helping people move into work. So our research questions, as you may have guessed, are, firstly, is this kind of sanctioning procedure, is it leading to declining numbers of people on job seekers' allowance? And has this relationship changed following these reforms in government? Is this sanctioning regime, this new sanctioning regime, tied to claimants moving off of job seekers' allowance and into work? Or are they going elsewhere? And is there any association with unemployment rates? I'm going to touch on that very briefly at the end. So for data, just very briefly, we have data from all of the local authorities. So again, these are the county level data. So it's 375 in the United Kingdom. We have the number of people that are claiming job seekers allowance in each of those regions. We have the offflow, so the people that are leaving, the number of people that leave in a given month, and the onflow, the number of people that begin signing on in a given month. And we have some data on the reasons. So we have some information on whether they enter work, whether they move, or whether they leave, but we have no idea where they go. That's the unknown destination. And we also have information on the number of claimants referred to sanction. Now, this is important, so I just want to spend a moment clarifying this. So you go to your local job coach, and you fail to turn up on time, for example, and you are sanctioned. They refer you to a more centralized system who then decide whether you are actually lose your unemployment benefit or not. That's called an adverse decision. If a non-adverse decision is where that centralized person basically sends a message back to the local job centre and says, no, this is not a sufficiently good reason to sanction someone, this is non-adverse. But there's a period of uncertainty there about whether the job seeker knows whether they're going to be sanctioned or not. And then there are cancelled or reversed. Cancelled is where someone actually stops signing on before the decision is made. For whatever reason, there could be various there. We're going to talk about those distinctions in a moment. And then finally, we look at kind of 12-monthly, quarterly rolling data on unemployment to look at whether there's any association between sanctions and changes in the employment rate. So in terms of the model, I'm not going to go into this in great detail, but suffice to say, what we're interested in is change over time within these local authorities. So we run kind of fixed effects regression models, which adjust for kind of differences across these local authorities. So we know that some areas are more affluent than others, some areas have higher labour supply than others, and so we kind of take into account those types of differences. But we're also interested in the impact of sanctions over a number of months. And the reason is this, is that when the sanction occurs and when it shows up in the data isn't perfectly matched in a monthly period. So we look at the kind of cumulative effect of sanctioning over a three-month period on the claimant rate at the end of that 3 months. So we look at January, February, March, the number of sanctions over those 3 months, and then we look at the claimant rate in March. And that's the kind of, or the change in the claimant rate in March. Okay, so here are the results. You may not get to see this at the back, but I'm going to try and highlight this. So what we're looking at here is this association between sanctions and the number of people that are claiming job seekers allowance as a proportion of the working age population. And if we look over the entire period, what we find is that for every 100 sanctions that are referred, so this is not where the decision's been made, just the referrals, we see 15 people leaving job seekers allowance. But this relationship changes. If we look at just the period before the Conservative coalition came to power, that association is only 1 in 10. Afterwards, it doubles to 2 in 10. So this period suggests that the sanctioning regime actually became more punitive, that more people were potentially leaving job seekers allowance as the number of referrals goes up. And what's important here is that the number of people being referred is much larger in this second period. Next, we wanted to look at the effect of adverse decisions. So these are people that actually had their unemployment insurance cut. Now, the reason that this is important is because just being referred or even being sanctioned shouldn't necessarily push you off the claimant count, because actually you're still officially claiming unemployment insurance even though you're not receiving the money, as long as you keep going to sign on. So there's no reason that being sanctioned should necessarily lead to any reduction in the claimant rate. So what we see here is that for each 100 additional people that are sanctioned, for each 100 additional people that have an adverse sanction where their unemployment benefit is stopped, what's the association with the reduction in the number of people that claim? Before the Conservative government came to power, that association is around 15, right? So for every 100 people that are adversely sanctioned, 15 leave Afterwards, that rises to around 40. So the removal is almost half. Half of those people that experience the adverse sanction, they go. But where do they go? And this is what we look at. I'll look at that in just a moment. So is this driven by people coming on? Is it that sanctions dissuade people from trying to sign on, or is it that it's moving off? Basically, sanctions move people off job seekers' allowance. They move them off unemployment benefit and don't necessarily stop people coming on. So people leave, become unemployed, sign on, get sanctioned, and then move somewhere else. We don't know what happens to them. And this is what this graph shows. There are people who are sanctioned who do end up finding work shortly afterwards. But the vast majority go to situations that we don't know what happens to them. Now, it's possible that some of these individuals actually are finding work and that the data just don't pick them up. But this is the vast majority of those that are sanctioned are actually lost to the system. We don't know what happens to them. So what is the consequences of this? So what does this mean for health? Carlos has already been talking about health in all policies, and the theme of this conference is the same. When we think about health in all policies, this is the types of policies that I think we need to be considering. Policies that actually have a dramatic impact on the economic hardship faced by individuals. What happens to those who disappear? Are they relying on informal networks? Are they moving into the informal economy? Certainly this is a loss of income to those households and families. We know from previous evidence, again from Rachel Loopstra and colleagues, that one of the things they do is they start using food banks. This is actually a new thing for the UK. They were rarely heard of 5-6 years ago, and we've seen a dramatic increase in food banks. And sanctions is one of the drivers of going to seek out these types of supports. And in conclusion, I want to finish with the story of David Clapson. Just over a year ago, David was found dead in his flat. He had no food in his stomach, and the reason that he had passed away was that he couldn't afford to pay to keep his fridge on. David was a diabetic, couldn't store his insulin safely, and had gone into a diabetic coma and passed away. Just before this, David had been sanctioned. Now, this is obviously probably an unusual and slightly anomalous story, but it highlights the very real financial and economic hardship that these policies can have in the lives of individuals. And our government has recently refused to track those people that are sanctioned to find out where that's happening. And I think that that is unacceptable. Thank you very much.